everyone. Welcome to Adventures in Autism, episode 29. I am Megan Carranza. Thank you so much for coming to listen. If this is your first episode, welcome. If you have been listening, thanks for coming on back. I just want to say thank you so much before we get started to everyone who has reached out this past week and written reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts. That really does help people to find the show. But this past week, I swear I've connected with so many new and wonderful people, amazing listeners, and I am just so thankful every week to be hearing from you guys. It's really, really incredible. We're actually coming up on 6 months with the podcast. Next week will be 6 months, which is crazy. In some ways, I can't believe that it's been 6 months already, but I also just feel like I've been doing this forever. But thank you so much, everyone, for coming on this ride with me. It's been so fun and just so amazing to connect with everybody. And today's episode is really exciting. I am speaking with Eileen, who is the founder of the blog Autism with a Side of Fries. And I'm sure most of you listening probably follow her. We talk about this in the episode, but she was really like a pioneer, I feel, in the autism mom blog thing. She has been doing this for 7 years. She talks about that in the episode. So she really came out and was doing this before a lot of people were. And I personally have been following her for a long time. And I love her honesty and her humor and just her realness. And that all totally comes through in the episode. She is just a gem, and she has a lot of wisdom to impart, which I really appreciate, and I know that you guys will too. So with that, I hope you enjoy listening to my conversation with Eileen. Hello, Eileen.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very
I'm good. Welcome to Adventures in Autism.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for being here. You and I were talking before we started. We've had like some major scheduling snafus. So I'm but, like, so glad.
by any determined parent, we finally made it work. We figured it out. So
yeah, so true. So true. We finally started from the bottom. Now we're here.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
I'm so excited to have you on. Eileen has a blog that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, and it's called Autism with a Side of Fries. And her and I, again, were talking before we started recording. And I said, I'm like, you're like the OG of mom bloggers, because like, how long have you had the blog?
It'll be 7 years coming up this summer. Will be the seventh year anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, blogging itself hasn't even been around for all that long. So I feel like you, especially like, I was saying, like, just before Logan was even diagnosed, and I was just kind of like dipping my toe into like that world and trying to find information and support, Autism with a Side of Fries like kept popping up. And so I've known about you and been following you for years. I'm so excited to get you on the pod.
I'm really excited. You're making me feel like a very swelled head right now.
Oh my gosh. You deserve.
I appreciate it.
No, you have. You've helped me, and I know you've helped so many other people. So I'm so excited for everyone to listen to this, people that follow you and not, because it's a different medium. Like, we always hear your voice, you know, in writing. But I'm excited to hear, you know, just kind of in your own words. So if you will kind of take us back to sort of the beginning of your journey and how that started.
Well, my time with autism has actually started before I even had my son with autism. For 9 years, I worked with children primarily on the autism spectrum. So I always joke, you know, I was in the pit, and then I got leveled up when I had my kiddo. And I worked primarily doing job coaching and pre-vocational training in a private school that was for children with disabilities. And most of my students were on the spectrum. And then I had my son. And after about a year of working, I decided I was going to quit and be a stay-at-home mom, because part of my thing was I was getting burnt out of autism. I was getting really tired. I needed a break. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom for a couple of years and just get away from this autism thing. And then, I think within about a year, ding, 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 ding. Hello, autism was at my door again. And this time it was for my kid. So that's how that happened in a
Wow.
strange twist of events. And it's, yeah, about around two, I guess, is when we kind of started. Like you said, you're kind of starting to wonder, okay, something's not adding up here with our child. And I was actually trying to remember just the other night, in preparation for this, was like, I don't know, I know some families do, but like they know their diagnosis date. I don't know the date. I just feel like we've always had autism here. I mean, my son's 14 now, so I think that's probably part of it, is just like some of it's just a blur. But it's just, I mean, I think from the get-go, I think I kind of always knew. We just didn't have a name for it. And, and it went from there. So.
Since you worked with kids with autism, did you like spot it really early, do you feel? Or were you like,
No.
that was your kid?
It was my kid. And it was just a case of I heard every cheesy old wives' tale cliche of, oh, he's very, my kiddo was a walking tornado from the get-go. He was walking at 8 months, and everybody was telling me, oh, he's an early walker, he'll be a late talker. And because he was always very hyperactive and doing his own things, people were like, oh, he's just like, he's so go-getting, he's just doing his own thing, he marched, every cliche. And I was just going, oh, okay, because I was a new mom and I didn't know. So I was just kind of going with it. But right around that time when it was about 20 months, and I'm reading in my, that wonderful Bible you get when you get a, when you find out you're pregnant, that what to expect when you're expecting, and then the series of what to expect the baby years and all that stuff. I started reading the toddler version, and it's telling me like, oh, by 20 months they should really tr be trying to talk. And I'm like, gee, kiddo really doesn't do that. What's going on here? And that's when we started the process of, oh, well, maybe he had a lot of ear infections, so maybe it's his hearing. Let's go get his hearing tested. And I think this part everybody's pretty familiar with in some scheme. You do the hearing testing because you're convinced your kid has a hearing issue. And then, and then you start early intervention and you think this is going to be the thing that just kind of like, oh, we're just going to play catch up. We're going to just have this extra thing and it's going to help the kid catch up. And it took me a very long time to realize it's not a case of catching up. We set our own pace and he'll get to those milestones when he gets to them. So. But in the beginning, it was like, when they first said autism, I'm like, really? Like, I really was just gobsmacked in a way. I just didn't see it going there. But
That's so interesting, especially since you were so already like immersed in that
But
world.
to me, it was like, oh, he's doing his own thing. He's quirky. Cool. I've always done my own thing. Whatever. It never even dawned in my peripheral that that might have been it.
It's
So.
so crazy because I mean, it just goes to show like we all know that quote, and it's still one of my favorites. That's like, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism.
Exactly,
And it holds up every time. Up, because it's just like, it doesn't matter what, the circumstances. It's like autism looks so different from person to person, and yet it's still autism. So it's so amazing to hear you say that like, even, as someone in the field, because there's times when I was just saying this to my son's therapist last week. We had a lot of people when Logan was very young, like when he first started early intervention, literally say to me, it's not autism. It might be this or that. It's not autism. And then as he got older and some of his behaviors and delays, like you said, weren't catching up, then it was kind of like, well, is that maybe what it is? Because I'd had it in the back of my mind the whole time. And then, of course, once you actually got the diagnosis, then you feel that guilt of like, oh my gosh, like we should have done this sooner. And but it was like I had all these professionals saying to me, I really don't think it's autism,
We had a similar thing in the beginning too when we first started doing doctor's visits, and I would say that would be the first question, like, oh my God, is he autistic? And they would be like, no. And again, it would be a lot of, gee, he's kind of social. No, gee, oh, he turns when we call his name. Like, there would be all these little, for some people, this would be the checklist. And this is when a doctor would say, yes, your child is on the spectrum. But for us, it was a case of, I don't want to put him in that. And then there was a point where he was about 3.5, where I finally was like, please just label him something, because I was afraid he wasn't going to get the necessary education / services that he needed.
Right.
If we didn't name him something, I'm like, I don't care what you put on this kid. Just give him some.
Oh, true. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to get caught up in the labels, but at the same time, it's like, you know, sometimes that's the catalyst to move things forward, and you need to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It does your family no favors to keep your head in the sand about it.
100%.
At all.
Especially.
And, you know, like you said, about you worry because you think, oh my gosh, how much time did we lose because we didn't know, or we couldn't get it, or we delayed getting it. But, you know, it is what it is, and you move on from there. So.
Right. And the best thing is just like, you know, what can you do to move forward? Because dwelling on the past is not going to
help.
So then, okay, after he got the diagnosis, and what did that look like for you guys then moving forward?
By that point, he was about 3.5. So he was already in an early intervention preschool program. And that just continued. And then he went into kindergarten, which was like in a self-contained class. And it's been pretty much that since then. He's always been in a self-contained class. Up until middle school, when he moved to my town's middle school, it was became clear that it was not the appropriate placement for him, which was a shame, because up to that point we had a really great experience with our elementary school system with the special needs program. But you know, then that meant starting all over again. I felt like we were back at square one when he was 3. Yeah. And trying to figure out, okay, now what do we do with him when he's 12? but we were very lucky, and we have a wonderful private school that serves only autistic children that he attends that I am absolutely in love with. And I pretty much told my town and them, he's not leaving until he's 21. And I just found out the other night that they're going to expand to an adult program. I said, great, he's going to be staying then till too. So,
oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I live in New Jersey, and you know, we are, I don't know if this is lucky or unlucky depending on how you look at it, we have one of the highest rates of autism in the United States is New Jersey.
Really?
Yes. So as I like to say, we're number one, and I don't know if that's a good thing or not. but depending on where you live in New Jersey, in a way it is a good thing, because we had a lot of different schools to look at for him. Now, some of them were completely inappropriate, but there were a couple others that were, you know, high runners, like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, he could do well there. I know we're incredibly lucky and incredibly blessed because we have that, but it's by the design of what's going on in our state right now, is that we need to have these schools, we need to have these services, because our autism rates are rapidly rising in our state. So you know, for a lot of people, I know the most popular question I've ever gotten in the blog is, where should I move in the United States for my child to have the best services? I don't have that necessarily a magical list, but I would definitely say, well, New Jersey is nice and I'm a good neighbor. So yeah.
That's been one of the most interesting things to me since starting the podcast, is because, I mean, I hear from people all over, and it's so funny that you say that, because I didn't know that New Jersey had such high rates, but I have had several guests on that live in New Jersey. I feel like I'm constantly talking to people in New Jersey. So that is so interesting that you say that, because it really makes sense.
Yeah.
But there are so many states that are just like abysmal for service. Oh
God. The horror stories I have read that have left me in tears.
Yes. It is heartbreaking. It is. Because we live in, you know, Chicago area.
Yeah.
I feel like we're pretty lucky. We have a lot. I mean, I think any, like, you know, close to like a metropolitan kind of city.
I think, yeah, that helps. Yeah. Yeah.
You're in a good spot. So it's like, I never even realized how bad it is in some areas until I started talking to people and listeners on the show. And it's so heartbreaking, because it's like, every kid deserves the best. They deserve this, the services and the chance.
And it's not even so much it's not even so much they deserve it. They are legally entitled to it. And I think that's Mm-hmm. One thing I would want to get across to parents, especially if they are new to this, is your child is legally entitled to that education. This isn't some sort of, well, gee, we're going to be nice and give your kid this thing. Mm-hmm. No, they're entitled. There is an American with Disabilities Act, and there's this wonderful thing called FAPE, which stands for Free and Appropriate Education. your child is entitled to it. And if your school system cannot provide it, they have to pay for a place for your kid to go to get mm-hmm. it, which is what, in my case, that's what I'm doing right now. My mm-hmm. town is paying for my son to be out of district placement. So, you know, that's one thing I can't stress enough to families is when they say, oh, well, there's no place for my kid to go. No, there is. Your yeah. town might be mm-hmm. a pain in the butt about paying for it, but there is. So,
yeah. I have a listener who I've gotten close to, who she's in a similar situation to what you're saying with like fighting to figure out, okay, well, if the public school isn't appropriate, then we need to give them the private school. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that's on them to pay for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's an Not interesting, you. Right. Exactly. Yep. But that's so important. I feel like this could be like a whole episode in itself. There's so many, like mm-hmm. just the legality of everything that goes into it. And I'm every day I learn something new and it's just crazy. So what was that like then? Obviously, like you were saying, the transition from elementary to junior high, most of the guests that I've had on have younger kids. So I know for me personally, that's always something that I have in the back of my mind that, you know, eventually we're going to have to move on. Once you found the right placement for him, did everything just kind of click or was it still sort of that transition time?
Within about 2 or 3 weeks, things were so much better that it was ridiculous. And I would keep talking, emailing the teacher, calling the teacher, like, okay, do we need to do like more behavior analysis on him to like, I was so worried about all these previous behaviors because that's how we found out at his old placement he wasn't doing very well. As I always say, behavior is communication. If your kid's throwing a desk every day at school, mm-hmm. they're trying to tell you something. Mm-hmm. You know, I was asking, like, are you seeing these behaviors? Should we, you know, like, should we observe more? And they're like, we're not seeing these behaviors. And when we do see behaviors, you know, what we do here is addressing them. Mm-hmm. Like, don't worry. Like, there was nothing he walked in doing that teacher hadn't seen before. so I have to say, from as hesitant as I was with going there, because I did feel somewhat bad taking him away from some classmates that he had been in class with literally since he was 3 mm-hmm. to a brand new place. He started relaxing more. He became more social with the kids, these brand new kids that he's never met before. He's mm-hmm. suddenly talking about when he's coming home at night and, mm-hmm. you know, he's talking about the things that they're doing at school during the day. His academics went up. Like, you know, there was so much progress made so quickly mm-hmm. that I realized, okay, this is where he needed to be. And, you know, I had to get over the fact that it didn't work out the way I thought everything was going to work out. That was my thing to get over more than it was his.
Isn't that always the case?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We have our own milestones that we have to hit. And that was one of mine. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, I got it.
That is so funny. Okay, so it sounds like then he, like you said, as a child, he struggled, you know, with his speech. But it sounds like now that's not an issue for him.
He still has trouble with his speech. The best way I can describe kiddo is he's very chatty, but some of the chats are conversations you've had 200 times with him already. Okay. It's a lot of scripting, and it's scripting from movies, TV, mm-hmm. conversations we had 3 years ago, you know, conversations he heard other people say, mm-hmm. Lines from books. So it does take a little bit to get real spontaneous conversation out of him. But, mm-hmm. you know, if I had to ask him, you know, what do you want to eat? He could tell me, you know, things like that.
I mean, huge. That's huge. Yeah. Well, like you said, if he's talking about things that you did at school, I feel like with typical kids, you're like, what did you do at school? I don't know.
Yeah. I probably get more than typical kids do. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh, my gosh. So. That I always love to hear that because that's definitely our biggest struggle. So whenever I hear about kids who, you know, struggled early on with speech and then it blossomed, that's like, because I always feel like a win for one is a win for all.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing we started noticing with him when he was really little was that he responded to music and I'm talking from like an infant.
Mm-hmm.
Melody, he would just start humming along. even if he couldn't open his mouth to say the words, you could hear him. The way I would always describe it is he would talk, but he just couldn't open his mouth. Mm-hmm. So it would kind of be like, you know how like the Charlie Brown teacher would talk? That's how he would be. He had conversations. We couldn't understand them.
Right.
So music started helping with that. He has a great music therapist that we actually go to, but when we first started with him, he was the one that taught me. He said, music is the one thing in the world where your brain gets a workout on both sides. Both your left and your right brain are going at the same time when you engage in music. So we just started singing everything around our house to help encourage him to talk, because you can sing something before you can say something is what we discovered with him. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I happen to be a musical geek. so my house pretty much runs on show tunes as it is. So that's pretty much what we've
done. My language. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just show tune it up big time around here. Uh-huh. And I would just start singing everything that he needed to do. Like, oh, it's time to go brush your teeth and just make up songs all day. And that's what really started helping him with getting him to talk, because he would start singing it before he could say it.
That's incredible. So, I had a music therapist on a while back. I can't remember what number it is. And it makes so much sense, I feel like, why music therapy, especially with kids with autism, like, they make that connection with it. Because, like you said, it is working both sides of your brain. And I feel like there's, like, that connection that you don't need to explain it with music. And it's, like, you feel that connection and it moves you in a certain way that, like, nothing else does. So it really, it's such an amazing tool.
It never ceases to amaze me what it can do. I mean, for now, it's not even so much a case of speech with him. It's really helps with his anxiety. Mm-hmm. It kind of, in a way, he gets into a meditative state when he's working with the therapist that he works with now. But he'll come home and he plays piano. My son plays guitar. I can't read sheet music. My son can read sheet music. Every once in a while, I ask him, like, what does that dot mean? And he literally rolls his eyes and plays the key on the piano, like, duh, you know, like, to show it to me.
That's amazing.
So his brain fascinates me, and it probably never will not fascinate me. So
I know it's always so incredible when you look at things like from their perspective, because, you know, we're so used to just day to day and out and not really thinking about things. And then it's like, Logan makes me really stop and think about things sometimes. And it's like, that alone is just such a gift, because it's like, I wouldn't have this perspective on things if it weren't for him.
And it definitely changes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does.
I was talking to my cousin last night about that. I was like, you know, you don't imagine to be on this path, obviously, but then once you're on it, I'm definitely a changed person, and I'm changed for the better, because I'm stronger and just, I'm more compassionate, and just, you just view things so differently as an autism parent, which I was going to ask you. So what was it like then, like now being on the other side of things, like, do you look back on that time when you were working with kids with autism and like see things differently?
Oh, absolutely. I've blogged about it. And not to toot my own horn, but I just spoke. I was part of the keynote at the Autism New Jersey, which is a big charity here in New Jersey.
Are you talking about that? That's amazing.
I did my presentation on the fact that I once used to do that job. And because it's literally, that whole convention is primarily for providers. It's for teachers. It's for therapists. It's for, you know, those in the field. And I went up there and I said, hi, it used to be you. You know nothing.
Oh my God. It's so true.
And I say it honestly, and especially me, because I was fresh faced, out of college, 25, didn't have kids, wasn't married. I mean, you want to talk about clueless. I was everything. But I had very well-meaning intentions.
Right. You didn't know you were clueless.
And just like them, very well-meaning. You don't, let's face it, nobody goes into that field of education for the money. So clearly I hold all teachers in high regards for that. Yeah. And you certainly don't go in it to be sane, because boy, does it make you crazy. But, you know, there was definitely so much I did not know. That, you know, at that in that keynote, I tried to address with them. Things that I noticed immediately is just, you know, one of the biggest things that I brought up was just like how completely broke you are financially.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great if a teacher says, hey, you know, your child really likes this toy, or, oh, hey, I think they would really enjoy this computer program, or, hey, you know, horseback riding lessons might be great for them. And maybe then you can't understand as a teacher, gee, I don't know why they didn't do A, B, or C. Well, maybe because they're broke. You know, they're broke because they're paying for therapies. They're broke because, like us, my husband works. I don't. My kid is 14. I didn't know I'd still be at home at 14. Mm-hmm. You know, so parents are on one income, or they have multiple children. And as I like to point out, sometimes multiple children mean you might have multiple diagnoses.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out which kid's going to be, how much speech therapy you can spread across more than one child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I pointed out was, you know, every year I had the greatest conversation with my insurance representative, which is I would get 30 visits a year for speech therapy paid for the kiddo. And it would be right around visit 28. I'd get a, you know, phone call saying, hey, you know, you're going to get to your limit. What do you want to do? And I would always tell them, well, he's still autistic. So
right.
Guess we're going over, you know, yeah. guess it's coming out of pocket.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, that's just it. That, you know, these are these things that an average teacher would not know, because it's just simply not, it's not in their skill set necessarily to know these types of things. And this, you know, the stress, or the fact that our days start incredibly early in the morning and sometimes go on till very late at night. And maybe that's why we're not, you know, why are we sending our kid in the same outfit 3 days in a row? Well, maybe because the kid's been up since 3 a.m. in the morning. And, you know, by day three of that, you're just like, fine, wear the shirt again. I don't care. Yeah,
the day's all the one anyway. So,
you know, exactly. You know, there's lots of things like that I think I didn't know as a young professional. And I know a lot of professionals have told me, even not even so much the younger ones, but older ones have even said to me, ones that have been in the field longer, like, you know, thank you for reminding me that. I think we forget some of that stuff sometimes. So I feel like I made a slight difference by addressing them.
You had asked that story on your, or that question on your Instagram. You were like, I'm going to do this. And like, what are things that you wish they would know? Yeah. And I had commented and said, I feel like as a parent, especially because my son is nonverbal, there's a lot of times where I just feel like I'm almost like questioned, because we can't ask him something and get a straight answer. So there's so many times where like I'll send Logan to school and get a phone call later and they're like, I think he's not feeling well. And I'm like, well, it's eating. Because the two biggest things with him is if he's not eating, or if he just like his energy just like plummets. And I'm like, is he eating? They're like, oh yeah, he ate like all his lunch, all his snacks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and how's his energy? They're like, oh, he's running around like crazy. And I'm like,
he's fine. Yep, fine. Pretty much like, the same here.
Yeah, like this is the school nurse, the teacher, and it's like I always feel like they're just like questioning, like, and maybe this is me just being sensitive, because I'll admit it, I'm totally sensitive, but it's like almost like they're like, oh, she doesn't know what's going on with her kid. Like, she sent him to school today and he's not feeling well. And it's like, no, he probably is just like having an off day and he's a little cranky, which if you or I were a little cranky, we could just say, I'm sorry, I'm having an off day, I'm a little cranky. He's not able to say that. So like you said, it's going to come out in behaviors, which Logan really doesn't have much, but he will like protest a little bit if he's not feeling.
Of course.
And like, you know, kids, they're up and down. Like I have a 3-year-old. She's crabby most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, she's a three-nager, I think is the term. I love that. It's totally appropriate.
Literally.
Everybody says terrible twos. No, three. No. Three is evil.
She turned three and overnight she became a three-nager. She's been a bear to deal with since the beginning. But yeah, this has been a
I stress that to parents a lot. Like, you know, if you get that communication notebook and you're supposed to write a little something, my kid's been up since three. They're going to know. Yeah. I'll tell them. And you know, that way I would get those phone calls too. As I always call them, the phone calls of shame, you know, like
it is like that though. It's like that. Like you feel like they don't trust your judgment on your child sometimes.
Mine would be, oh, he was blinking too much, which I always laughed about that. twirling his hair a lot. And I'm like, well, that's his stim. Like, he likes to twirl hair. Just be grateful it's his hair and not yours, because he's done that too. You know, things like that. And I remember one time I was just out of pure frustration because they kept calling me about things like, oh, gee, he's not just himself. I'm like, take him to the bathroom. He probably has to poop.
Yeah,
like,
that too.
And sure enough, I got a phone call an hour later. Yeah, that's what he needed to do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's like playing Sherlock. You're just guessing half the time. And I tell it, it's easier now with the teacher that I've been working with the kiddo, because she's been in the field for a while. But I have to stress that with teachers, like, we're just as clueless as you are sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to throw stuff at a wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a case of our kid needs to go poop. And maybe it's a case of our kid is really thirsty and needs to get a drink of water. Mm-hmm. We just don't know any more than you do.
Right.
So,
but we're doing our best. We're doing our best.
Yeah. So
I feel like I always have to stress that, because it's like there are times when I feel like I have to kind of go on the defense, and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I have probably a little better idea about what's going on with him than they do.
Yeah.
But that can be tough sometimes, because I feel like my judgment is questioned, and I'm just like, I am doing the best that I can here.
It's a tricky position to be in, because we feel like we're being judged by them, but at the same time we're asking them for help and they're looking at us like, well, what do you think? Well, you know,
yeah,
you can't judge me, but at the same time consider me the expert. So we have to work together on this
for sure. Logan was at a new school this year because he started kindergarten, and now like we're getting towards the end of the year, and I feel like we're in a better spot. Because
he's used to it.
Preschool. Right. He'd been at the same preschool. And, you know, we had a few of those calls here and there, but it was like they got to know him. He got to know them, and everything worked out pretty smoothly. But then at the new school, it was like definitely they needed to kind of learn his quirks and different things and different facets. So it's lessened. But yeah, there, especially in the beginning of the year, I felt like there was a lot of calls where it was just like a lot of back and forth.
I would tell anybody that has, and this is another popular question, is, oh my God, my kid's going to get a different teacher next year. They've had the same teacher for 3 years or 2 years, you know, and they're freaking out. And my first thing is, okay, well, if your kid was typical, they'd be getting a new teacher every year.
Right.
So just suck that up. I get it.
Yeah.
But that's just what it would be. And then the second thing you do is, great, okay, make an appointment to meet with a brand new teacher who's going to get your kid five days a week. Mm-hmm. And write out, even, you know, keep a list. And I always say, email. We live in a smartphone technology world. Email is at your fingertips. You could be sitting there at night watching TV and email a teacher. Mm-hmm. And you can say, hey, this is what's been going on in my house this week. If something has particularly gone around, like, you know, maybe your spouse went away on a work trip and that really threw a kink through the works, because, you know, when dad's not there, then XYZ of the normal routine isn't being done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fill teachers in on stuff like this stuff. And if it's a new teacher, like, yeah, this is my kid. This is how, these are three things that really motivate him. These are his three favorite foods. These are, you know, three favorite songs he likes, things like that. A teacher getting that kind of information is very valuable to them as well, because they'd like to know who this person is that's coming into their class.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a teacher say no to that kind of information coming to them. Like, don't bother. I don't need it. they don't want it.
right. No, they want it. I think having those open lines of communication, and it can be difficult when it's a new teacher, but it's like, you, and I think as advocates, as mothers, we are used to kind of doing that. And it's like, you just have to throw it out there. And like you said, just make that connection, send the email, phone call, because they usually are really open to it, but it's like, you just have to get to that place where it's like the communication is open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get it. I mean, I've so many parents have said, oh, I don't want to lose this teacher because she, you know, she finally gets my kid. And I'm like, well, you can do what I do, which is stalk them down on social media after they don't have your kid anymore and then friend them, which is what I do.
I have a couple of those. I took
one of kiddo's very beloved elementary school teachers with me to a concert, because she and I get along so well. So, aww. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that the relationship has to end. It's just, you know, it's a different. And frankly, it's kind of good to have that in your back pocket, because when the kiddo started having trouble when he was at middle school, I was able to call on those teachers and be like, oh my God, help me. Mm-hmm. We're having all these issues. What do I do? Because they knew him better than anybody. They just had him for 5 or 6 years. So,
at school setting, because it's like, I, you know, we know our kids as mom, but like they have a different relationship with their teachers and therapists.
Exactly. And their information to me at that time was very valuable and very helpful. and helped us get us to the right place where we needed to go, because they were able to get on in there. They knew him better than anybody. So, yeah. You know, so I always say to families, just stalk your former teachers on social media. But, you know, maybe some teachers right now are listening to this and going, no, don't do that. Right? No, we do. Sorry, we do. And when you get a new teacher, you always look them up. Even if their profile is set to private, look at that profile picture. What does it look like to you? I'm telling all the secrets now.
Yeah. Do your research. Oh
my exactly. God. Well, I mean, not for nothing, but we had recently, through the state, we've been applied for respite care. And we were approved for it, but we're still looking for a respite worker, which is, there's the catch. They sent somebody here for us to interview. And it became quite clear within 5 minutes that this person had very, very little experience. She had literally just turned 20 the day before. So she was super young, very nice, but completely inexperienced. And, you know, I just went on the gram. Within 10 minutes, found her profile. And let's just say there was quite a bit of stuff that was of illegal activity. And we'll leave it at that.
Oh, my. Okay.
That a 20-year-old is stupid and would post, of course, right, on their social media. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. I'm not going to have this person in my house. I'm not having this person with my kid.
Yeah.
And I then had to call her boss and be like, I had to, you know, I was kind of very cagey. I didn't want to really necessarily want to say what I was worried about. But at the same time, I was like, let's just say I did my research on her and I found out more about her than you did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you to find out that stuff. And they were kind of shocked that I had like even did that, you know, like you're sitting in my house to be with my kid. You think I'm not going to do that?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, maybe some other parent will be slacking, but it ain't going to be this one. So
no. I am familiar with the term respite worker, but will you explain for anyone who's not?
Respite, basically, for lack of better words, is a fancy way of saying someone who watches your kids so you can get a break. And it can be many different ways. There's overnight respite, which is sometimes the child goes to, I guess, for lack of better words, a group home for a weekend. And the family stays in their home without the child and they get a break. Or sometimes respite is just simply like typical, it looks like a typical babysitting. They come over for a couple of hours, you go out and do something, and they hang out with your kid at home. It's different with every state. So I can't speak and say, hey, just apply to this program. That's the end of it.
Right.
In New Jersey right now, like I said, we were approved quickly for respite. Getting the worker is another story. Right now, they are very keen on us to do this thing called self-hire respite, which is basically we find the worker and then we would file paperwork and eventually get paid through the state. I'm not too hopeful on that, because my whole thing is if I could find somebody to work with my kid, I wouldn't have needed respite to begin with.
Yeah.
So we're working on that. But
that's something that I have talked about before in the podcast. I don't know if I've talked about with other people, but it's definitely it's something that you don't really think about unless you have a child with special needs. Cause it's like, if you have typical children, then, you know, finding a babysitter is like,
oh, it's nothing. No, you hire the 17-year-old down the street.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And you don't think twice about it.
Yeah. Like just this weekend, we had a family wedding for my side of the family, and my mom and my sister are really the only people that babysit for Logan. My daughters, I have others that I would let babysit, but and even then, honestly, like, he has therapy part of the day. So it's like they're not with all three of my kids on their own. And it's just because it's a lot of work and there's a lot that goes into it. So for the wedding, all my babysitters were there. So my husband had to stay home and watch the kids, because it's like we didn't have anybody who, you know, can babysit. And I'm like, sorry, I'm like, you're going to have to stay home. Like, I'm flying solo to this wedding. Because it's not as simple as just like, oh, yeah, you know, we'll get a babysitter and
Yeah, it's pretty much what our situation is as well. If it's not a family member watching him, we don't go.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. And it sucks. But it's like you said, what can you do? I mean, I know a lot of people say, oh, do you go on care.com? You think I haven't by this point?
Right.
It's not easy. I know some people have had success by asking paraprofessionals that work in classrooms sometimes are looking for babysitting hours, and those are great sources. If you can find them, great. If they're looking for the hours, super. I know I remember this back in college, which is what kills me, is now, of course, I can't find it, but they used to call, I majored in psychology, and I remember our psych professors all the time would always be like, hey, there's this family looking for help. And it would always be to a child that had either autism or some sort of special need. And the parents would be calling the education department or the psychology department thinking, oh, there's got to be some student here that at least will have some sort of idea of what's going on with our child. That might. So that's another resource, too. If you live by a local college, you could try that. But, you know, right now, and we're kind of lucky because kiddo, because he is 14, there is some maturity that's helped with a lot of things where we couldn't take him to something before. Well, now maybe we could take him for part of it. But there's certain events like, this is hard for me to speak about, but like, you know, a couple of years ago, I lost my dad. There was no way I could take kiddo to the funeral. There's just no way. And like, that sucks. Like I literally, but you know, my mom and my brother understood what we were going through and they were like, all right, don't worry. We're going to plan the funeral service for when he's in school. So at least during those hours, we know where he is and you don't have to worry about it. And, you know, those are the types of choices that sometimes we as families have to make that suck.
And there's no other way to put it. It just sucks.
You know, but I wasn't gonna bring him into that situation and have it be potentially really confusing and weird for him because, you know, as much as we were telling him things like, oh no, Papa passed away, Papa went to heaven. Walking into a, let's face it, is weird for a typical person to walk into a funeral home. Add autism to that. But, you know, something we can't do. So for us, I'm not going to say for everybody, but for my family, it wouldn't work.
Well, and especially like you're, I mean, you yourself are grieving. It's a difficult time for you. So then you have the added stress of, you know, worrying about your child. It's like, it's a difficult situation. We actually, another time when didn't have a babysitter, my aunt passed away last summer and my husband had to he had to work and it was like a crazy work situation that he could not get out of. So my now my kids are little, so it was like they I don't think they understood exactly what was going on. And like Logan, I mean, we told him where we were going, and it was just for like the church service. It was not like anything like you said, like at a funeral home. But yeah, just like I had to bring him and that, cause again, I had no one, there's no one that can watch him. So like, and it was in the summer, he didn't have school. So there are definitely those tough situations where it's like, you just, unless you have a kid with special needs,
you
just
wouldn't know it. Well, even I had a doctor situation, which is, where the doctor called me back to come in for doing some testing. And I purposely said to him on the phone, like, listen, can we delay it till the next, the following week? Because my son will be back in school at the time. It was right before September when in New Jersey, we don't go back until September. I know in other parts of the country, you guys go back earlier, but, and he was just like, Ami, like, why can't you just come in? I'm like, well, my son is home from school. And he's just like, well, bring him with you. And I'm like, I can't leave him in the waiting room, but he's just hearing that I had at the time, a 12-year-old son. He's like, just leave your 12-year-old in the waiting room. Big deal. And I'm like, nope, can't do it. Can't do it. And you know, that third, and I got off the phone with him so frustrated. I'm thinking, this is a general practitioner who did not understand what this medical condition was about.
Oh, they don't know. They and I'm like a specialist. They don't know.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there thinking, who the hell am I going to take this kid to when he's a 21-year-old, an adult? He's eventually going to need medical care. And who's he going to go to? Because this guy doesn't know anything about it.
For sure. You know? Something that I wanted to ask you because obviously so he's 14 now. What has it been like with him getting older and like puberty? Like have you, because I know I've talked to parents who've said like, you know, just kind of like that hormone shift can sometimes like bring out more behaviors or like make things difficult. Have you guys noticed that at all?
Well, he's definitely very 14. I can there's, you know, there's typical behaviors you see. Eye rolling, there's talking back. And he'll do things that remind me so much of myself. It's just that, you know, he would come home to his after school and he immediately goes to his room and closes the door and puts on music, which I can't think of a more typical 14-year-old thing to do than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also, because of the moodiness with his hormones, we've had to deal with, he now has acne. And that's now become a new thing. Like, you know, we kind of thought we had the hygiene thing down.
Nope.
Let's throw that into it. I'm trying to teach him how to take care of his skin by, okay, you got to put this special cream on when you have a little pimple like that. And, he's getting a beard. He's starting to grow hair on his chin, which I do not like. I keep telling him, I'm like, stop growing. You need to stop. I don't care for this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these are the things that we are now tackling. And with communication issues being in play, it's not fun. His behaviors, knock wood as I say this, lately have not been that bad. Mm-hmm. But when they're bad, they're bad. I mean, he is an inch taller than me. I'm 5'6", so he's about 5'7". Mm-hmm. He's, I think, 130-something pounds. If he's not going to want to do something, guess what? He ain't doing it. And there's nothing I can do to stop him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have many a hole in my wall that he has kicked.
Oh, wow.
I've had times where he has grabbed at me and left hand marks on my arms. That later, you know, as soon as he's out of the meltdown, he doesn't even, you know, he has no, I don't want to say no remorse, but he just has no memory of having done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or understanding that that's what he did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the behaviors come, they're not fun. We try to ride them out. Right now, it's just kind of moody anxiety more than anything. I often say with my husband, I can handle autism, but the anxiety's a bitch.
yeah.
And that's the worst part right now, is dealing with his anxiety. He's such an anxious kid, and just constantly needing to be reassured of schedule, of what things are going to happen when. That's been a real challenge lately, since teenage years more than anything. So
yeah, I remember, again, you posted on Instagram recently about him having a late start day, mm-hmm. and how it's gonna throw everything off. And we hadn't experienced that until this year. Logan had his first late start day, and it was like the worst day he's had in a long time.
Oh, they suck.
Oh my god, it was so much
they
worse
suck
than a snow day, because it's like snow day, you just know, okay, we're gonna hunker down. Yep. I mean, it's not pleasant, but it's like you can make it work. But that being off the routine, like I got notes home saying he was just upset all day. He mm-hmm. was off by it. And then he had therapy. He was acting out in therapy. I mean, it's just enough. Yeah.
I'd rather have the snow day, because at least there's snow. You're not going to school. You can go outside and play. Okay.
Right.
Like, you know, you can at least. But when you have a snow, either a delayed opening or an early dismissal, forget it. It's mm-hmm. he came home with an early dismissal about 3 weeks ago, and all I heard about was what he was missing.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with delayed opening is, you know, I said to him, okay, the van driver is going to be at 9:30 today, not your usual time. And I never heard from the moment the van should have picked him up to the moment the van actually picked him up. He didn't go 30 seconds without asking me, is it 9:30? Is it 9:30? And he can tell time.
Uh-huh.
He knows how to do it. But it was, he could not handle that it wasn't 9:30 yet. So, yeah. That's, by the time he found that van, I closed the door and I was just like, oh God, help me. Like, I'm so tired. And it was 9:30 and I had to start my day. And I'm like, oh, no, I want to just go back to bed.
Oh. But it like breaks your heart too.
Yeah,
cause it's just hard. Like, you know, this is so hard for them to have that, make that adjustment. And, yeah. It's just like, it's so, you just wish you could take it all away, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
I know, you know. Oh my gosh. Well, Eileen, I could talk to you all day.
I feel like, we'll call me back later.
Yeah. No, like, so, I mean, obviously just like your insight as an autism mom, but I think because you have been at it for so long and like been on the other side of things, just the perspective that you have, and I feel like you've just given so many little like nuggets of wisdom here, which I'm so grateful for, and I know all the listeners will be too. Do you want to share where people can connect with you?
Absolutely. Thank you. You can find me at Autism with a Side of Fries on Facebook. I am also Autism with a Side of Fries on Instagram. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for me on Twitter, I'm at French Fry Inc. because somebody took Mama Fry, and boy, was I mad about that. Anyway, I was so mad. But and my blog is Autism with a Side of Fries .blogspot.com. But find me, Facebook and Instagram is where I primarily hang out, because I'm a 40-something-year-old woman. That's what we dig. So
yeah,
that's our ground, man.
I forgot to ask, but I have to know, what made you call it Autism with a Side of Fries?
Because he is by far half potato at this point. That is his absolute favorite food. Okay, loves fries.
I love fries, because you've talked before, but I wasn't sure if that was what. Yeah. So it's just like, that's how my son is newly with bacon. It's like, he literally, if you cut him open, all you'd find is bacon.
any fry will do. And at a time, there was literally, that was all he was eating. So it's gotten better, but still, that's his everything. Every once in a while, even on the hardest days, I'm like, just make another side of fries. We'll get through it. One side of fries at a time. So
I love that. I mean, he's a smart kid. Who doesn't love fries?
Exactly. Or bacon. I'm going to give Logan's right. Logan is absolutely right. Team Logan on this one. So.
Bacon. Yeah. He's a big fan of the bacon. It's so funny. Every time I'm like cooking bacon all day long now. And he's whenever he's here, he's like, oh, this house always smells so good, because it always smells like bacon.
Who doesn't love it? Exactly. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming, Eileen. It was so great to chat with you.
I'm glad we were able to finally do this.
Yes, we were. All right. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to my conversation with Eileen. I just think that she is amazing. It's so cool when you talk to someone who you have followed for a long time, because I feel like I know her, even though I don't. but I still learned so much about their journey. And I just think that, like I had said before, the fact that she kind of came out and was sharing these stories and being so open and honest back when not a ton of people were, is just so amazing. And every little bit of wisdom she has, I feel, is so valuable. And her perspective, especially, is just, it's very unique. And I think that it's really important for especially moms who are starting out in their journey, moms and dads and anyone else who's listening. I think just hearing that perspective, and from someone who has been doing this for a while, sharing for a while and going through it even longer, is just, it's incredible. So thank you again so much, Eileen, for coming on the pod. And thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on Facebook at Adventures in Autism Podcast, or on Instagram at Adventures in Autism Pod, or you can email me at adventuresinautism2018. Again, I love to hear from you guys. It is just makes my day every time. And again, if you are enjoying the show, please leave reviews on Apple Podcast. It really does help people find the show and just spread the love. So that's all for now. And thank you so much for listening. Take care.